Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What's happening, everybody? Happy Monday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on July 19th. Frank Stanfill joined by Scott White here to recap another jam-packed weekend. Some grim Mets news coming out of New York. We'll start there. Brandon Marsh was promoted by the Angels. We have waiver ads, the drop-o-meter, and much more. Scotty to Hottie. How was the weekend, bud?
It was good. It was good. What about you?
It was pretty good. Can't complain outside of the fact that the only Yankee game I went to was the one that they didn't win. So that was, look, beggars can't be choosers. It was still fun to go to the game. And I did want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Evan Malter, who actually invited me to the game. We had a great time together. Really good dude. We were sitting down on the field level, like four seats behind the dugout. So really, really thankful that he was able to come through and hook that up. Cause I didn't know, we didn't know heading into Friday if there was even going to be a game. And then it wound up happening, and but it was a lot of fun. So I was happy to do that. But let's get things started here, Scott, with that Mets news, because man, it was a rough one here for the Mets fans. Jacob DeGrom placed on the IL retroactive to July 15th with tightness in his right forearm. Apparently, DeGrom felt this discomfort on Friday while throwing a bullpen session. An MRI hours later showed there was forearm tightness, but no structural damage. Manager Luis Rojas said on Sunday that DeGrom will not throw again until the discomfort goes away. DeGrom had this to say as well. Quote, I'm frustrated. I don't know what else to say. I guess it's good news whenever structurally everything looks good, but the level of frustration now is really high. Kind of has just been the case all season long with Jacob DeGrom, Scott. Obviously, people just get him out of their lineups. And now we wait. I don't think there's anything else we can say or do.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no way to speculate how long the absence is going to be. You'd expect it to be on the shorter side, given that there is no structural damage, at least not that the MRI turned up. And, you know, that's usually what we go on. You know, occasionally you hear of instances where nothing turns up and then later something does turn up. So that's kind of in the back of my mind. But you know, no reason to panic. We hoped he'd be back and ready to go at the start of the second half. I think we kind of assumed that since there was no structural damage and since he has a tendency to bounce back quickly from these things. But as you say, I think you just got to wait it out. It doesn't do you much good to sell him, really. I think you risk selling low. I don't know. Maybe he just misses one more turn. I don't know. It's really hard to say.
Yeah, this has been just the season for Jacob DeGrom. When he pitches, he is a historically amazing pitcher, but we just kind of have to navigate through these forearm, back, oblique injuries, shoulder injuries for Jacob DeGrom as well. It's been tough, but hold on. Don't try and sell low. I kind of talked about doing that the first time that he got hurt, and then he just comes back and looks awesome. So Don't listen to what I've said in the past. Just hold Jacob DeGrom and hope everything turns out all right here. The other big news was Francisco Lindor, who went to the IL with a grade 2 oblique strain, and they haven't given any timeline, but obliques obviously are very tough. This could be anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks, which is like your standard injury timeline, I guess, but especially more so for obliques. So I do have some possible replacements here, Scott. Let's start off in a shallower league. These are names that are rostered in 60 to 75% of CBS leagues. Willy Adames, David Fletcher, Luis Arias. How would you rank those three options?
I think you ranked them appropriately here. Adames, Fletcher, and Arias. Obviously, Adames, we've talked about it a lot. Just how much getting out of Tropicana Field, where apparently he didn't like the batter's eye there. And over his entire career, his splits at home in Tampa were awful. So getting him out of there, we've seen him come alive with the Brewers. Still striking out, you know, a little too much for my liking with the Brewers. 25%. It's not as bad as I thought. And he's been hot since the start of the second half. So he would be number one because he gives you that power element. But David Fletcher's been hitting like 450 since about mid-June. Now, that's pretty much all he provides. No power, no speed, really. But he's been batting leadoff for the Angels. That's of course, helps get the most out of that batting average. And you know, it might actually be a pretty close call in points league specifically since Fletcher's strikeout rate is so low. But those are clearly one and two, and Luis Arias is a distant third.
A little bit deeper, these are names that are rostered in less than 50% of CBS leagues. Got Brendan Rodgers, your boy, or Nico Hoerner, who's like kind of your boy, but just not to the same level as Brendan Rodgers.
I like both of these guys a lot, but I'd rather go with the guy who has power, Brendan Rodgers. And I think definitely the ceiling's higher for him, especially playing half his games at Coors Field. Frankly, I like Rodgers and Hoerner both more than Luis Arias.
No.
Not to drag your guy, but it's the truth. It's the honest truth.
That is fair. All right, so we're going Brendan Rodgers over Nico Hoerner, and then in the deepest of leagues, these are names that are rostered in less than 20% of CBS leagues. If you play in a 15-teamer, anything deeper than that, Elvis Andrus, Leury Garcia, Orlando Arcia. Again, deep names here, Scott. Anyone that stands out?
Don't like these guys so much, but I would probably say Orlando Arcia, who looks like he is going to be playing regularly for the Braves still, even with Jock Peterson aboard. And he's the one guy of these three that I hope, just based on what he was doing at AAA prior to his promotion, him being only 26 years old still, I think there might be a next level for him that we haven't seen at the majors yet. Bet against it, of course, but we're having to dig pretty deep here at this point.
Yeah. Orlando Arcia, 7% rostered. He's got outfield eligibility, shortstop eligibility there. Again, in a deeper league, if you do need a replacement for Francisco Lindor. We had a big prospect call up on Sunday. It was really kind of came out of nowhere. The Angels promoting Brandon Marsh, who is known for his hit and speed tools. He does offer some pop as well. And throughout the AA and AAA in his career, 120 games. He's hit 10 homers and 20 steals during that time. Brendan Marsh was also hitting .382 with two doubles, two triples, two homers, and a stolen base in 12 July games since returning from an injury that he had to his shoulder. So 13% rostered here, Scott, for Brendan Marsh. How excited are you about him? Is he a must add? Would you drop guys like Jeff McNeil, Kevin Biggio for Brendan Marsh?
No, I wouldn't drop either of them for Marsh. And I was surprised how little enthusiasm there seemed to be for him in my Tout Wars League, which is a 15-team roto league. So five outfielders, 15 teams, pretty deep, pretty deep. I won him with a $27 bid. That's out of 1,000. So 2.7% of my budget. I won Brandon Marshall. Only one other person even bothered to bid on him. And I think it was the guy in first place currently. So yeah. I mean, kind of a weird prospect because he was basically top 50 for everybody coming into the year, but a lot of that was built on his kind of just like pure athleticism, his ability to play defense, and in terms of what he brings to the table fantasy wise, I think there's a wide range of outcomes here because he rarely showed like big in-game power in the minors, and that's kind of been the biggest question surrounding Brandon Marshall for a couple Brandon Marshall was a wide receiver for the Broncos.
And the Jets. Don't forget about my Jets, Scott.
And he's not Randy Marsh either. He's Brandon Marsh. Brandon Marsh of the Los Angeles Angels. And the power development. That's been a big question that's surrounded him for a while now. I think the hit tool is pretty good. I think the speed is there, but again, he didn't demonstrate much of it in game. Never had like a 20 steal season in the minors, and usually stolen bases go down in the majors. So I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of that from him. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of when Jesse Winker first got called up, because, okay, he looks like a pretty good hitter, but where's the power? And eventually that did come around for Winker. And I think it's an easy skill to cultivate in the majors, but, you know, Brandon Marsh doesn't have quite those contact skills. So I don't know. As with every prospect call-up, my expectations have come down this year, where, you know, unless it's tip-top of the scale guy, I'm going to kind of take a wait-and-see approach. So I guess, long story short, maybe in a five outfielder league, you'd be putting a small bid on Brandon Marsh, but otherwise, I'm going to wait and see.
I've got a nickname for him, Scott. You ready?
Yeah.
Lord Marsh.
Not sure I get it. Not sure I follow you.
So you brought up Randy Marsh, right? And one of my favorite episodes of South Park is when he makes fun of Lord. And he's like, I am Lord. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So now I haven't seen that one. There are a lot of South Park episodes.
There are a lot. Actually, it's funny. My fiance just watched all of them, and she watched them in reverse order. So I don't know why she did that. But she watched the seasons in reverse order. She watched like each season from the beginning of that season to the end of the season, but she just watched them in reverse. I don't know why, but yeah. Anyway, Lord Marsh, that's what we're going to go with. We're marrying together Brandon Marsh and Randy Marsh from South Park there. I tweeted out earlier today, I think he was a must add in all five outfielder leagues. Those are more so roto category leagues, and he does offer some speed, or at least I think that's a part of his skill set that he can offer at the major league level. You said you want him for $27 in Tout Wars out of a $1,000 budget?
Yeah.
Well, guess what, Scott? I also want him for $27 in a $1,000 budget in Tout Wars.
Were you copying off of me?
I was not.
I was using my cover sheet.
So, but that's a little bit different. That's a head-to-head points league. It's a 12-team head-to-head points league, but we start five outfielders, middle infielder, corner, utility. So it's a little bit deeper rosters there. So I took a shot on him there. $27 out of a $1,000 budget for Brandon Marsh. All right, that was a lot to talk about before we even got to Oh My Goodness Gracious, but let's do it.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott. Did you settle on one Oh My Goodness Gracious player? Because you kind of threw like five players at me before we started. So where are you going?
I did. No, I settled on AJ Pollock.
Okay.
Who had another two-hit game Sunday. But, you know, even beyond that, six home runs in his past seven games. And just having a monstrous July is AJ Pollock. And, you know, that's Oh My Goodness Gracious enough. Like, Oh My Goodness Gracious, look at those stats from AJ Pollock. But the most, the thing that really gets the Oh My Goodness Gracious out of me is that he's only 52% rostered in CBS sports leagues, which seems like a problem when you're producing that much. And, you know, obviously this is a guy whose name's been out there in fantasy for a number of years now. So I'm a little surprised people haven't caught on yet to AJ Pollock. Hasn't been playing quite every day for the Dodgers, so maybe that has helped help drive down that roster rate. But at this point, I mean, he's got 13 home runs. He's got an OPS approaching 900. And that was after missing some time, right, with injury at one point. So, how long did he miss? He missed most of May. Missed most of May with injury. So, AJ Pollock is still a thing, obviously in a really good lineup. I would go after him before I went after Brandon Marsh, that's for sure.
All right, yeah, AJ Pollock. He's actually started 9 of the last 10 games for the Dodgers as well, Scott. So I know we do have some concern, you know, when everyone's healthy for the Dodgers and playing well, he's probably not going to play every day, but it seems like he's playing.
That's a recent development, probably because he's been so hot for...
Yeah.
It looks like for the rest of June, he was sitting like every fourth or fifth game.
Yeah, in July.
Or July. Yeah.
In July.
Yeah, July's really picked up. Yeah.
You mentioned that he's been crushing in July. 378 batting average, 7 homers, 1384 OPS. That's in 13 July games there for AJ Pollock. And what'd you say the roster rate was, Scott?
52%.
52%. All right. Good to know there. Well, how does he stack up against some of these other outfield waiver options, Scott, who did something notable over the weekend? JD Davis went 3-for-4 with a double dong on Saturday. He's 49% rostered. Jock Peterson started his first two games with the Braves, one against a righty, one against a lefty. He had 4 hits and a home run in those two starts. Dom Smith went 3-for-5 on Sunday. He's batting 300 with 3 homers in July. Akil Baddoo went 2-for-4 with his 14th steal on Sunday. Adam Duvall 2-for-3 with his 20th home run. So I just threw a bunch of names your way. JD Davis, Jock Peterson, Dom Smith, Baddoo, Duvall, and Pollock. Give me your two favorites from that group.
JD Davis is definitely number one. I'm sorry. I didn't know Pollock was included. I'll go Pollock number one, and then JD Davis. That makes for an easy top two, I guess. Yeah, JD Davis hasn't played much at all this year. I think he's right around 60 plate appearances or something. But caught fire toward the end of his rehab assignment, hit those 2 home runs Saturday. And, you know, for the little bit he's played this year, the numbers are insane. 388 batting average, 1177 OPS. Guy I liked a lot heading into last year. You know, seemed like he had a breakout 2 years ago, but really had a problem elevating last year. He's elevating better in the little bit we've seen of him so far this year. The strikeout rate is way up. The strikeout's kind of concerning, but, you know, small sample all the way around. Not really sure what to make of it. I just think JD Davis, based on what he did Saturday night alone, and I think you got to give him a chance. You got to see what he can do. Just knowing how much enthusiasm there's been for him in the past.
Yeah, and Davis is crushing the ball this season too. 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. You mentioned he's lifting the ball more. 14.7 degree average launch angle for JD Davis. That would represent a career high if he stays there. So it's a matter of him continuing to lift the ball as much as he has this season. Super small sample. It's only been 30 batted balls this year again, which you mentioned. But look, players are motivated by different things. And the Mets, all we keep hearing about, is they're looking into Chris Bryant and Josh Donaldson. They want to upgrade third base. JD Davis is trying to keep his job here. So the guy has something to play for. And as of now, it's only been a couple of games since he's returned, but he is playing very well. So again, that is JD Davis. I mentioned Akil Baddoo, who just continues to run. He has 14 steals in the season. He has 4 steals already in the month of July, and he has at least 4 steals in each of the past 3 months. So if you do need stolen bases in any type of categories league, Akil Baddoo, 51% rostered. Oh my goodness gracious, for me, this isn't really going to change anything. There's not much actionable here for fantasy, but just wanted to give a shout out to the Padres, man, and what they did this weekend. 41 runs they put up. Did wind up losing the game on Sunday. 41 runs in 3 games against the Washington Nationals, including 24 runs on Friday alone, which included Jake Cronenworth hitting for the 3rd cycle in Padres history. And we did our all breakout teams for the first half last week, Scott, and Jake Cronenworth was my breakout second baseman. And looks like he's picking up right where he left off to close the first half of the season, because he was red hot and he has been so far this season, this weekend as well. And then Will Myers had a double dong on Friday, including a grand slam. So hopefully that could be a sign of things to come for Will Myers. But yeah, Jake Cronenworth has been awesome this entire season. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Mike Foltynewicz, man, at the Blue Jays. Oh my goodness. On Sunday. Wow. Hope you didn't start this guy anywhere. You might have had to in a deeper league, but an inning and 2/3, 8 hits, 10 runs. That is a 54.0 ERA and a 6.00 whip for
4 home runs.
Mike Folti. I think I heard, I was just watching MLB Network before, he's allowed 28 home runs this season, which is 7 more than the next closest starting pitcher in baseball.
Anytime he's had like a decent start, it's felt lucky.
Yes.
Like he's just toast.
Yes.
There's nothing to see with Mike Foltynewicz. I saw some people tweeting out that he was started in like more than half of main event leagues for the NFBC.
Not on my team. And I had him on my team, but I chose not to start him.
But, well, A, why do you have him on your team?
Well, Scott, I mean, there's been a lot of injuries, man. So it's tough.
I know,
there.
But
it's tough.
That's desperate times, I guess.
Yeah, you're really
I guess I can't relate to that level of desperation at starting pitcher in most of my leagues.
Yeah, you're trying to figure out why we're doing to stream or not to stream every day. I mean, it's people like me who have Mike Fulton-Evich on their team. We don't really have a choice, man. I think I picked up Eric Fetty, who faces the Marlins this week. Like, that's how desperate I am. So it's tough. It's tough out there in those 15-team leagues. Before we hit the news and notes, just want to remind everyone, we are finalists for the sports category of the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We really do appreciate all that you do for us, and we hope that you enjoy our show enough to nominate us to advance to the final round. To nominate Fantasy Baseball Today, go to podcastawards.com/app/signup and then toggle down the sports category. We've included the link at the top of the episode description as well. And just a heads up that we will be doing another live stream Q&A on our YouTube channel today on Monday. When you are hearing this, watching this July 19th from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time, come hang out. Could ask us fantasy-related questions. The trade deadline is approaching. MLB, ask us about your favorite team, questions about life, whatever. Just come hang out and ask. That's youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss anything that we do. News and notes from the weekend. All of these names were placed on the IL, and we'll start with probably the biggest news outside of DeGrom and Lindor was Pablo Lopez, who went to the IL with a right rotator cuff strain, which is a very big blow the way that he's pitching this year. I had him ranked inside my top 25 starting pitchers. No timetable right now for Pablo Lopez, but I doubt this is a short stay for him. Braxton Garrett started on Sunday. But Scott, I think this might actually, I don't know if they're going to want to rush Edward Cabrera, but this might move the timeline up a little bit for him getting to the bigs.
He's been dominant since returning from injury and has a lot of innings left in the tank. I've talked about Edward Cabrera as a potential replacement when what seems like the inevitable to me, the shutting down of Trevor Rogers, comes to pass, though, you know, that might still be 6 weeks away. So, yeah, I mean, this could get Cabrera up sooner. If they're planning to call him up anyway, maybe why waste those bullets in the minors? I think as of now, they don't have five rotation spots accounted for, do they? I know they added Braxton Garrett. He started on Sunday and was not very good. But they had an opening even before adding him. Let's see. It looks like Baseball Reference is showing Ross Detweiler. He hasn't been making starts, has he?
He started the other day, and I believe it was Jordan Holloway who came in as the follower.
Yeah. He did, and he got sent down. It looks like Braxton Garrett got sent down after Sunday's game. So I don't know what they're doing, but we could see Nick Niedert again. I don't know. Yeah, I mean they're kind of running out of options here. I think Edward Cabrera might be close to getting the call.
Yeah, 13% rostered. So if you do play in some of those deeper leagues, NL only, I think now is the time to stash Edward Cabrera. A few other names who hit the IL, Luke Voit with a bone bruise in his knee. It's been just an awful season for Luke Voit with all the injuries he's gone through. Devin Williams with elbow discomfort. Tim LaCastro tore his ACL. Jake Fraley went to the IL with an illness. Michael Lorenzen back on the IL, this time with a hamstring. Nico Goodrum with a calf. And Jose Urania with a groin strain. Mike Trout is close to a full recovery, but the outfielder doesn't have a rehab assignment scheduled. However, I did see that he tweeted some airplane emojis, and he wrote Oakland. So I don't know if that means he's getting ready to return or something like that.
I saw a beat writer confirm that he is traveling with the team to Oakland, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's being activated. But maybe it does.
Good to know.
I added that last part, but maybe it does.
Okay, so yeah, they start a series with the Oakland A's on Monday, so that would be a very welcome surprise if we do get Mike Trout returning for Monday's game. Some Cleveland pitcher updates. Shane Bieber has done work with heavy balls, but has yet to resume normal throwing. It's just, come on, Frank, grow up. He remains without a clear timeline. Aaron Civale is throwing from 105 feet. Civale has been on the IL since June 24th with a sprained right middle finger. He was slated to miss 4 to 5 weeks, so he figures to still be a week or two away from being able to go on a rehab assignment. Again, that is Aaron Civale. The White Sox gave Lance Lynn a two-year, $38 million extension, which is well-deserved. Good for Lance Lynn. Anthony Rendon recently suffered a setback with his hamstring and won't return for several weeks. Much like Luke Voit, it's been a nightmare season for Anthony Rendon. Corey Seager won't return from the IL on Monday, but will participate in another simulated game. So that sounds like he is getting closer and closer to returning. Clayton Kershaw said on Saturday that he could resume playing catch next week. He's on the IL with that forearm injury. Kevin Gausman could return and start on Monday. He was scratched Friday to deal with a family emergency. Freddie Peralta won't make his first start of the second half until next week. The Brewers are planning to go with a six-man rotation for now. And Scott, maybe this is part of, well, obviously it is. This is part of their plan to limit Freddie Peralta and Corbin Burns. But maybe by having a six-man rotation, that means that they won't necessarily limit those pitchers as much in game, you know, in terms of number of pitches and how deep they go into games because they have a six-man rotation. So that's kind of my glass half full take on it.
Well, what's interesting is we've seen a lot of teams go with six-man rotation for stretches this year. That seems to be kind of that's become kind of the primary way to keep the innings counts down for individual pitchers after the unprecedentedly short 2020 season. And we were worried how that would impact certain pitchers' workloads, especially the young guys. And we just haven't seen great measures taken to curtail the innings. The biggest one has been stretching the rotation to six pitchers for a while. I'm not sure it's enough. Now, in the Brewers' case, they're in first place. They're in first place by seven games. They're, you know, very much thinking playoffs. So, I mean, they need Peralta and Burns. their pitching staff is what's getting them to the playoffs, right? They need those guys. So,
and they need them in the playoffs, too. So that's especially noteworthy. But look, if they continue to build a massive lead, then September, maybe they just don't need those guys, right? As much as they would have if they were,
well,
you know,
to
in a closer
get to the playoffs. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. Would there be a phantom IL stint in September?
Maybe
just to save those bullets again, to use the same metaphor. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how the contenders handle it, but I do think we're going to see from the non-contenders like the Marlins, which is why I keep citing Trevor Rogers, not picking on him or anything, but he's a rookie who has yet to skip a turn even, and the Marlins aren't going anywhere, it doesn't appear. I don't think they're quite ready to pack it in yet, but it's the longest of long shots that the Marlins do anything this year. So yeah, by September, I just have a hard time believing they're going to stick with Rogers all the way through. But the Brewers kind of have to with Peralta and Burns. So I don't know how they're going to handle it.
Speaking of those Marlins, they are no longer discussing a contract extension with Starling Marte, which I guess means that he will be dealt. I saw on Sunday the Yankees, the Astros could be interested. I guess the Atlanta Braves, if they want to add another outfielder there, even after they acquired Jock Peterson, so that's a possibility. Buster Posey is set to return from the IL on Monday, so you can get him back in your lineups. We had a few subpar updates for Nationals pitchers. Steven Strasburg didn't feel right after a simulated game, his simulated game last weekend, so he'll back off from mound work for now. Joe Ross threw on Friday, but still felt some discomfort in his elbow, so he will remain on the IL. Mark Canha returned from the IL on Saturday. Padres catcher Austin Nola is nearing his return. Nick Senzel is expected to return sometime in early August. The Tigers are expected to call Matt Manning up to start Wednesday's game against the Rangers. Gavin Lux is dealing with a mild hamstring strain after leaving Sunday's game. Kyle Muller is on track to be recalled and start Monday for the Braves, which sets him up as a two-star pitcher against the Padres and the Phillies. He is 44% rostered. Scott, any interest in Kyle Muller for those matchups, Padres and Phillies this week?
Yeah, sure. He's among my sleeper pitchers for this week. We saw a lot of strikeout potential from him in the majors. And he kept the walks down in his two starts back in the minors, you know, leading up to this presumed call-up. So, yeah, I mean, there's upside here. Obviously, there's risk, too. Just depends on how big the need is. I do want to, since we mentioned Burns earlier, really encouraging start from Corbin Burns Sunday, who was somebody we've expressed concerns about. The crackdown on the foreign substances, the spin rate falling significantly on his cutter, his main pitch. And it was still down in this start, but only down 109 RPM. Got 19 whiffs, struck out 12 in 8 1/3 innings. His previous four starts, 26 Ks and 24 and a third innings, like little more than one per. That was way down from what we were seeing from Burns in April and May. So Burns and Gerrit Cole both had a start this week, and that looked much like what we had come to expect from them before the foreign substance crackdown. And, you know, in the case of both, spin rate was still down, but not nearly as much as we were seeing before. I don't know that what that means in terms of their approach, what's changed, but that combined with the great results, I think is hopefully means we don't have to worry so much about them going forward.
Yeah, I just think that there was probably an adjustment period for both of those starting pitchers and whoever else had, you know, it was reported before the season that 90% of pitchers were using some kind of substance. There's an article from Eno Saris in The Athletic. So, look, it's not just these two guys, but obviously they're two of the best pitchers in baseball, so we continuously talk about them. But, yeah, I think...
They're two of the ones that we saw their performance suffer, it seems.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
In correlation to a drop in spin rate. So, yeah, there were... If you were going to worry about anybody, it would be them. But, you know, this weekend, they hopefully relieved some of those concerns.
Gerrit Cole's last two starts, which came against two of the best lineups in baseball, the Astros and the Red Sox, 15 innings pitched, one earned run, 23 strikeouts there for Gerrit Cole. So definitely, if you held on to him, I hope you did, of course, your confidence is growing again in Gerrit Cole. We spoke about Kyle Muller. Tuki Toussaint is scheduled to start Tuesday's game for the Braves. He has 18 strikeouts over his last two starts at AAA, 6% rostered, so only in the deepest of leagues, but you heard the name Tuki Toussaint for a long time now. Hasn't really come to fruition yet, so I guess just a name to throw on the scout team. The Blue Jays are returning to Toronto July 30th, so look, no matter where they've been, they've had great hitter venues so far this season. That's not going to change in Rogers Center. It's a great ballpark to hit in as well. So shout out to the Blue Jays headed back to Toronto. And just like these aren't fantasy related stories, but what happened outside of the Padres Nationals game Saturday was obviously noteworthy. I mean, there was apparently a shooting that went on outside the stadium and it halted play and they stopped the game and they picked it back up on Sunday, but they were packing fans inside the dugouts and the clubhouse and stuff. So it was definitely a scary scene there with the Padres and Nationals. And then going from one non-fantasy story to another, this one is a little bit more lighthearted, obviously, but Yankees fans, can we just stop like with the throwing stuff on the field and throwing the baseballs? And apparently a fan threw a baseball on the field and it hit Alex Verdugo and it started like this whole controversy and Verdugo's yelling at fans and stuff. I never understood it, Scott. I never caught a baseball in my life at a game. If I caught a home run ball, no matter who hit it, I'm not throwing it back on the field. I'm keeping it. Like, what is wrong with people, man?
I don't know. You know, I imagine it's a lot of pressure from the crowd. You get caught up in the moment, not thinking straight.
Nope, not me.
No, it's hard to resist. You know, when multitudes around you are telling you to do a thing, it's hard to be like, no, I'm not going to do that thing. I'm pretty good at it personally, but you know, that's. Because I'm weird. I it's not like it's easy to do.
All right, we're going to hit a quick break, but when we return, we do have some prospect updates and more. We'll do that next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Let's hit some of those prospect updates. And Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said on Sunday that Josiah Gray is, quote, in the mix to receive a call-up and start Tuesday's game against the Giants. Josiah Gray has a 2.87 ERA over four games, which include three starts at AAA this season. He's 22% rostered. Scott, how interested are you in Josiah Gray?
Pretty interested. If he actually gets called up, you know, I think in general, there's a bigger need for starting pitchers than for outfielders, I'd say. So it'd be a pretty close call whether, if I'm deciding between Josiah Gray and Brandon Marsh, which one I'd pick up. Expecting both to fail in their first stint in the majors, but if one of them doesn't, you know, obviously I'd pivot to the one who's not failing. Gray, you know, he hasn't been healthy much this year. I don't think he's gotten up to five innings yet since returning in the minors, but the stuff has looked good, shown a lot of strikeout potential in the past. Pretty exciting pitching prospect, and obviously we'll have all the benefits of pitching for the Dodgers. I do wonder if it would be like, if they'd handle him like we've seen with Tony Gonsolin, where it's just a very slow buildup to the kind of workload that makes him usable, even if he is good. So, you know, expectations low for Josiah Gray, but the skills are good enough that he could certainly exceed those expectations.
Both Bobby Witt and Nick Prado were promoted to AAA within the Royals organization on Sunday. Bobby Witt, someone we spoke a lot about last week, he's 49% rostered and pretty much a mustache at this point, right, Scott? If you can afford to hold...
He's a mustache.
Well, no, this is a mustache, but it's a must space stash.
Yeah, I don't... I'd like him. I'd like Bobby Witt more if he had a mustache, but no, I mean, there's a lot to like to begin with. Yeah, I think in terms of the prospects that are going to excite us immediately, like everybody drop what you're doing and pick him up anywhere he's available if they get called up. In terms of those prospects, I think Bobby Witt might be the last one left who could realistically get called up. And I don't think it's 100% he gets called up, because obviously the Royals aren't competing for anything. He's been moved up the system aggressively, still only 21. They might just wait until next year for Bobby Witt. But if he continues to destroy it at AAA like he was at AA, they're an organization that in the past has shown a willingness to let the player dictate his own timetable. Kind of going against the grain there, the Royals do. So definitely could understand stashing Witt. And I think he's already rostered in roughly 50% of CBS sports leagues.
Yeah, 49%. So he's right there around that mark. And someone else who's right around 50% is Vidal Brujan. He's 53% rostered. We haven't checked in on the Rays prospects in a while, but Vidal Brujan has started just 3 of 8 games since being called up by the Rays. And he is just 1 for 15 in those games. And it was... He actually got that only hit was his first plate appearance in the majors, so he's gone 0 for 14 since. And then Wander Franco went 1 for 3 with his third home run on Sunday. All 3 of his home runs this season have come against left-handed pitching. He's batting .324 against lefties. He is batting just .125 against righties, and he's a switch hitter. So it's kind of weird. I don't really think there's much to see there. I looked into his splits in the minors. Didn't really have any crazy issues one way or the other for Wander Franco, so... I think it's just kind of like a weird sample size thing for him. But Scott, Vidal Brujan, I mean, this is about as bad as the first couple of weeks could have gone if you have him on your team.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times you hear that an organization is waiting for a prospect to get hot before calling him up. And, you know, streaks are obviously a pretty fickle thing. And we try not to change our entire assessment of a player based on whether he's hot or cold. So in a way, it seems like you kind of want to rail against that. Teams doing that and whatever. The player's the player. Who cares if he's hot or cold? Just call him up. But this is a good example as to why, because, I mean, you don't want to so much stacked against the player in his first stint in the majors. It's already such a difficult transition he's making. You at least want him to feel like he's seeing the ball well, has a swing in line. And Brujan was going through a pretty rough stretch at AAA before getting called up basically the entire month of June. So I don't know that that explains why he struggled on the majors, but certainly it hasn't helped.
Jarren Duran, the Red Sox outfield prospect who we spoke about last week when he first got called up, he didn't start on Friday against lefty Jordan Montgomery, so I do wonder if that's the plan moving forward, is that he's going to be a platoon bat, at least against right-handed pitching to start. He did go 1 for 6 in the 2 games that he played with a run scored between Saturday and Sunday. And Scott, I spent $158 on Jarren Duran of FAB in my NFBC main event league, which is a 15-team 5x5 roto. The next closest bid was 102. What do you think? 158 out of a $1,000 budget. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, in a league that deep, it makes sense. I think Duran is a higher priority than like Brandon Marsh. I would have picked him up in any 5 outfielder league. I think he was already rostered in all my 15 teamers, so it wasn't even a chance to make a play for him. I can't compare your bid to mine, but that sounds like what you need to pay to get him in a league that deep.
Nice. Again, Jarren Duran, outfield prospect for the Red Sox. Very excited about Duran, and we're also very excited about Express, who is back as a sponsor on the podcast. Express Confidence, Express You. Express is all new and all about you with a fresh mix of casual, versatile, and super comfortable styles. They have everything you can imagine, from suits and blazers to an everyday outfit like jeans and a V-neck shirt. Specifically for the jeans, they have all different styles, ranging from skinny to slim straight to tapered and boot cut. You can also find their new four-way hyper stretch denim, their stretchiest denim yet. I have a few pairs of the skinny stretch jeans myself, and they are awesome because they look great, are very stylish, and of course are very comfortable as well. And of course, you need something up top to complete your outfit. Check out their printed short sleeve shirts, which help you stand out all summer in a good way, of course. They have tropical and geometric prints for every vibe, or you can just go with a super comfy V-neck or a crew neck shirt like the one that I am wearing right here. This is from Express. Nice little salmon, pinkish, reddish type color. Super comfortable. Love it. Moisture wicking fabric, so no sweat marks, and of course, machine washable, so you don't have to worry about dry cleaning. We encourage all of our listeners to be on the lookout for great summer deals in stores and at express.com. Express Confidence, Express You. All right, Scott, so we ranked some outfield waiver options a little bit earlier. Let's take a look at some deeper waiver options if you play in a 15-team league, AL, NL only, whatever it might be. Travis Jankowski is now with the Philadelphia Phillies. He had 7 hits with 4 RBI and a steal over the weekend. He's 1% rostered. John Nogowski, who? That's right. First baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates, got into a shouting match with Marcus Stroman actually on Friday. He has 19 hits over his last 9 games. He's 3% rostered. Wilmer Defoe, who is on the Pirates, has 8 hits over his last 4 games, including 2 home runs. Ramon Urias with the Baltimore Orioles went 2-for-5 on Sunday. He has 7 multi-hit games in the month of July. He's batting .287. He has a .297 career batting average in the minors. Again, that is Ramon Urias. And then Bradley Zimmer this weekend with Cleveland, 5 hits, including 2 homers and a steal. All of these names are rostered in less than 5% of CBS leagues, Scott. So very deep. Jankowski, Nogowski, Wilmer Defoe, Ramon Urias, and Bradley Zimmer. Any interest in any?
To be honest, if you gave me this list of names, the only one I could have told you for sure what team he was on was Bradley Zimmer. If you gave me this list of names.
That sounds about right.
In no context. So I don't have a lot of opinions about them. Travis Jankowski is obviously very fast, but it's not like he's ever stuck before. So I don't really expect him to this time either.
All right. Some other hitting standouts from the weekend. Big names just doing what they're supposed to. Juan Soto, 7 hits, including 3 homers. Remember in the home run derby, he said, you know, sometimes the home run derby messes up people's swing. Not for me. It's going to help me unlock my power again. So far, so good for Juan Soto. Vlad Jr. hit 3 more homers this weekend. He now has 31. He trails only Shohei Ohtani, who hit his 34th home run on Sunday. Max Muncy had 4 hits this weekend. Just on Saturday, 4 hits with a double dong. That game came in Colorado. Big weekend for Freddie Freeman. He had 6 hits, 2 homers. All of a sudden, Scott, he's batting .282, 21 homers, .893 OPS. Very rough first 2 months for Freddie Freeman, but he's bounced back in a big way. And then some players that are bouncing back-ish, showing us signs of life. Christian Yelich, it's baby steps, but back-to-back multi-hit games for him. 4 hits in that stretch, 1 homer, 1 steal, 3 runs, 3 RBI. The last 2 games for Yelich. For the Dodgers, Will Smith, shouldn't really expect this often, but a sock and a shoe. His 11th homer and his 2nd steal of the season came on Sunday for Will Smith. Mike Yastrzemski had a double dong on Friday. Since he's returned from the IL on June 12th, Yastrzemski, .257 batting average, 8 homers, .880 OPS. Sounds a lot like Mike Yastrzemski that we've seen the past couple of seasons. Jonathan Scope is heating back up, 12 hits over his last 8 games, including a home run on Sunday. Eric Hosmer played 2 games this weekend. He had 4 hits, a homer, and a steal. And Gleyber Torres has homered in back-to-back games. Saturday was a real Yankee Stadium special. It looked like a pop-up to right field and somehow got out, Scott. So I throw a bunch of names your way. Is there anything that you would like to elaborate on here, Scott, between Gleyber, Hosmer, Yastrzemski, who's really bounced back in a big way, some big games here for Christian Yelich as well?
Yastrzemski, I think, could maybe continue to up his level of production in a way I don't really expect the others to. Well, I don't know how long a list are we. Obviously, Freddie Freeman's going to keep going and get his numbers. His numbers are probably going to stay on the rise too. But like Yastrzemski, he struck out so much in April. His strikeout rate was bloated beyond belief, and it's been less than 20% since then. So a big turnaround for Yastrzemski with the strikeouts. Very encouraging to see. And I think there are good days ahead for him. The others, you know, I think it's just continued rising and falling.
All right. Yeah. For Yastrzemski, since he's returned on June 12th, which is the date that I gave you earlier, 16.5% strikeout rate. So that is a great mark. He's putting the ball in the air a ton, a 52% fly ball rate during that time. So lots of power, some OBP, and making more contact now for Mike Yastrzemski. Let's take a look at some of the pitcher standouts from this weekend. And the standouts in a bad way. So I've got to fire up the dropo meter for this group here, Scott. And we'll start with Chris Paddock, who was at the Nationals. 5 innings, 4 runs, 2 strikeouts on Friday. His last 5 starts for Chris Paddock, he's got a 10.31 ERA and a 7.5% swinging strike rate. What is the dropo meter on Chris Paddock?
I will put it at about a 7, let's say. 7. You know, what's weird is his spin rates, you know, obviously was very low early in the season. It got to be decent on the fastball. He saw some success. And so you would assume, okay, the spin rate must have dropped during this rough stretch for him, this very rough stretch. And that hasn't really happened. He hasn't seen his spin rate regress. It's still not like a great spin rate for a fastball, but it was closer to what he put up in 2019 when he had obviously a very impressive rookie season. Yeah, not seeing a lot of reason for hope here for Paddock. But I know just a month ago we were seeing reason for hope. So that's why it's only a 7 as opposed to a 9 or 10.
Well, how about for his teammate, Blake Snell, who made his return also against the Nationals. 4 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, 4 walks. Just more of the same disappointing Blake Snell that we've seen basically all season. And in that start, his slider was down almost 2 miles per hour. He's now up to a 5.21 ERA. Blake Snell is 93% rostered, Scott. The dropometer.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't have a lot of faith in Snell anymore. I actually did see him get dropped in a 12-team points league, and I put in a bid for him. It wasn't a huge bid. I got outbid for him, so he got scooped up right away. But it's probably like a 6 on the dropometer. Not to the point that I would do it probably in a standard size league, but yeah, I mean, my faith is obviously diminished. I don't consider him a must-start pitcher anymore.
Patrick Corbin was on the opposite side for one of those starts, at least. He was up against the Padres, 5 1/3, 10 hits, 6 earned runs, 4 walks. Corbin's capable of decent starts here or there, but overall, he still has a 5.66 ERA this season and a 9.5% K-minus walk percentage, which is the fourth lowest among qualified starting pitchers this season. 85% rostered is Patrick Corbin. The dropometer.
I'll go 9 on Corbin. Mm. Not seeing a lot that's going to compel me to hang on to him.
All right. How about Rich Hill, Scott? At the Braves, 4 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, only 9 swinging strikes. He's not known for his velocity, but it was down even more. Fastball velo down 1.5 miles per hour in the start. Curveball down 2 miles per hour. Rich Hill is still 80% rostered, Scott. The dropometer.
Yeah, I'll probably go like 8 on him. I know he's gone 9 starts without a quality start, so that seems like a problem. And yet, having said that, his overall ERA and WHIP are still decent, so that's why it's only an 8, but I just don't see a lot of impact happening here from Corbin.
All right, one more southpaw. Danny Duffy versus the Orioles this weekend. 4 innings, 1 run, 3 strikeouts. He did leave early in this game because he got hit in the knee with a comebacker, but his velocity has been down a little bit. His fastball velo pre-injury was 93.7 miles per hour. In this start, he averages 92.2 miles per hour. So what do you think, Scott? Danny Duffy, the dropometer.
Yeah, I'm going to go as low as I did for Snell, actually, a 6, which means I'm probably not dropping Danny Duffy. I was discouraged when I saw he only went 4 innings until I saw the reason for it removed from being hit by a comebacker. He threw 77 pitches in his previous start and seemed like he was building back up to his starter's workload. It's been a slow buildup, like with Tony Gonsolin, but I think at the end of it, you're going to be pretty happy you held on to Danny Duffy.
All right, so you have some names to drop. Who can you add? This is SP Waivers Part 1. Jameson Taillon up against the Red Sox on Sunday, 5 1/3 shutout. Over his last three starts, he's allowed just 3 earned runs. That is a 1.49 ERA. He's 75% rostered. Chris Flexen at the Angels this weekend, 7 innings, 1 run, only 2 strikeouts. John Gray at home against the Dodgers in Coors Field, 7 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes. He's 70% rostered. And then Kwanghyun Kim was up against the Giants. 6 shutout, only 1 strikeout. I don't know how he does it. His underlying numbers are awful, but Kim has a 0.38 ERA over his last 4 starts. So Taillon, Flexen, John Gray, Kim. Who's your favorite of that group, Scott?
I think it's John Gray at this point. I don't know what's gotten into him, but in 5 starts since returning from the IL, he's looked like a different pitcher. He's looked downright dominant with the swinging strikes. All 5 of the starts have been good, and 2 of them have come at home, including this one. So I don't know how long he can sustain it. I guess it's possible he gets traded, right? Before the deadline, and that would be great news.
He should, but it's also the Rockies, so...
Yeah, I guess he's my favorite. Taillon would be second. And Flex in a distant third. I'm with you on Kim. Like, there must be something I'm missing with Kim. I'm willing to grant that, but I'm not willing to suspend my process for Kim as long as he's defied it. And yeah. it's not like he's that useful because he doesn't pitch deep into games. Consistently. So I think I can continue to ignore Kim for that reason.
Every now and then there are going to be starting pitchers that just defy the underlying numbers because for some, again, unforeseen reason, but for Kim, it could be deception, you know, quality of contact. He does suppress a lot of hard contact. So I think you kind of couple those things together and that's how he's made himself as valuable as he is. Starting pitcher waivers part 2. Alex Cobb this weekend up against the Seattle Mariners. 6 2/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. Where's Chris when we need him? Madison Bumgarner made his return to the mound. He was up against the Cubs. 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. Zach Thompson, first start since July 4th. Only 4 innings, 2 runs, 0 earned, and 2 strikeouts. Tyler McGill at the Pirates. 6 shutout with 2 strikeouts. And then Willie Peralta up against the Minnesota Twins on Sunday. Who is this guy? 7 shutout, 4 hits, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts, a 1.64 ERA for Peralta through 4 starts this season. Cobb, Bumgarner, Thompson, McGill, Peralta. This is like a loaded group, Scott. Who do you like most?
Well, definitely Zach Thompson. He got pulled because of rain, right? That's the reason he went 4 innings?
That I will look into, but that definitely could be the case.
I still really like what I've seen from him. Alex Cobb might be number 2 on the list. 4 of his past 5 starts have been great. We've been pointing out, especially Chris, that the xFIP, the xERA, they're low. You know, he's getting strikeouts and he's getting ground balls, and that's normally what I look to when finding pitchers to pursue. So I understand he's struggled a lot in spite of that, but he may be starting to turn it around here finally. He may be living up to the peripherals finally. That would be 1 and 2. You know, Tyler McGill's probably 3rd for me. I don't have a lot of interest in Bumgarner. I know he had a successful stretch earlier in the year, but yeah, the velocity, you know, when he was succeeding earlier in the year, he got that fastball velocity back up to 91, and it was down below 90 on average in this first start back. I'm skeptical of him still. And Willie Peralta, really good ground ball rate. Close to 60% is the ground ball rate. It's higher than it's ever been for him. But I still think it's not enough of a sample to change your thinking on a 32-year-old who's already been around the block and would never amounted to much of anything in fantasy. So Yeah, I'm not ready to put much faith in Willie Peralta either.
Yeah, I mentioned Peralta has that 1.64 ERA that comes with a 4.45 xFIP. So has been lucky to this point, does get a lot of ground balls. But if you're just looking for a streamer this week at Kansas City, it's a pretty good matchup for Willie Peralta. So I will just throw that out there. For Mad Bum, the velocity on the fastball was down to 1.6 miles per hour in this one. And the spin rates on each of his cutter, four-seam, and curveball were all down over 300 RPM for Madison Bumgarner. So I thought that was notable as well. Starting pitcher waivers part three. These are very deep league options, but Vince Velasquez was up against the Marlins. 5 shutout, 4 strikeouts. I told you on Friday, stream him. He's really good against the Marlins. He's not good against anybody else. Kyle Freeland was up against the Dodgers. 6 innings, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts, another quality start. Last 5 starts for Kyle Freeland. He's got a 2.25 ERA. And then Chad Kuhl was up against the Mets. 5 innings, 1 run, 5 walks, 3 strikeouts. Pretty weird line, but his last 5 starts, a 1.98 ERA. Anything here, Scott? Velasquez, Freeland, Kuhl. Deeper leagues.
I don't think so. I think they're more likely to do harm than good. I would just go with a reliever.
All right.
If I had to.
These starting pitchers have been struggling recently, Scott. So I'll just throw a bunch of names your way. And if there's anything you want to add on any of them, or, you know, if you think all of these guys should be on your bench right now, let us know. Sandy Alcantara, his last 4 starts, he's got a 4.91 ERA. Stroman, his last 4 starts, he's got a 5.0 ERA. Tyler Mahle, his last 7 starts, has a 4.93 ERA. Yusei Kikuchi, over his last 2, the spin rates and the velocity both way down. He's given up 12 earned runs during that span. Framber Valdez has a 6.56 ERA over his last 3 starts. And Joe Musgrove has a 7.46 ERA over his last 4 starts. So obviously, I'm cherry picking small sample sizes here, but these guys have been struggling recently. Alcantara, Stroman, Mahle, Kikuchi, Valdez, and Musgrove.
Yeah, I in like a 12-team league, I've been treating Tyler Mahle like a matchups play, basically, from the start. And so I don't really think there's reason to change that approach. I think just Joe Musgrove is there, too. I think it's like 4 straight less than 6 innings for him. I think that's right. And really, his numbers have gotten worse every month. Musgrove's. So I'm not really sure why. And he'll bounce back with pretty good stretches that make him worth holding on to. But I think we're to the point where it's time to treat him like a matchups play. I gotta say, I hadn't noticed that with Yusei Kikuchi's velocity. Let me double check here. Yeah, it is down a couple miles per hour. Yeah, that's concerning, and the fact that, you know, 2 really ugly starts from him in a row. ERA was low 3s, now it's high 3s again, just like that. So I think I'm worried enough about Kikuchi that if you have alternatives, I want to see him get back on track. The others, Alcantara, Stroman, Valdez, there aren't really any tangible concerns there for me. Yeah, I think I'd ride it out through the rough patches. I mean, Valdez especially, he still has, as good as he was last year, still a higher ground ball rate than last year, which didn't even seem possible because he was a distant number one last year, and a higher swinging strike rate than last year, higher than it's ever been. So I wouldn't worry about Framber Valdez too much, even though the last 3 starts have been shaky.
These were not studly performances, but were definitely notable. Kenta Maeda at the Tigers, 5 innings, 3 runs, 8 strikeouts, 3 starts in July. He's got a 1.69 ERA with 25 strikeouts over 16 innings pitched. Frankie Montas against Cleveland, 6 innings, 2 runs, and 7 strikeouts. And then Zach Gallen's return versus the Cubs, 5 2/3, 1 run, 7 strikeouts, Scott. So Maeda, Montas, Gallen. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Maeda really, he looks like he may be fixed. Now, we want to see him go deeper than 5 innings to start because it's going to be hard for him to make an impact if that's all he's doing. But at least in roto leagues, I feel pretty confident putting him in the lineup again because he's just been getting a ton of whiffs since returning. The splitter looks good again. I feel better about what Zach Gallen did in his return because obviously the line was fine, but I don't like seeing that velocity down with the with the forearm issues he's had.
The call to the pen, some bullpen updates from the weekend for the Phillies on Friday. Ranger Suarez got his third save, and then he took the blown save on Saturday. He gave up a two-run homer to Jesus Aguilar, and then on Sunday, Suarez was unavailable. You guessed it. Hector Neris back in, picked up his 12th save of the season for Tampa Bay this weekend. Pete Fairbanks picked up two more saves, his fourth and his fifth. Diego Castillo, nowhere to be found. Did I miss something? I'm pretty sure he's on the Rays roster still, and these have been close games. He didn't pitch at all, so I don't really know what the situation is with Diego Castillo. For the Mariners, on Friday, Kendall Graveman came in with a 6-2 lead. He gave up three hits and three runs. Paul Sewald recorded the final out for his third save of the season. He's 17% rostered for those in deeper leagues.
But then he did struggle on Sunday.
Yeah,
Sewald did.
I think he gave up a 2- or 3-run homer is what I saw. So I think it's still Graveman for now, but Sewald has really, really good numbers on the season. For Cleveland, James Karinchak on Friday pitched in the eighth in a 1-run game. Emmanuel Clase came in and gave up a walk-off 2-run homer to Jed Lowry. On Saturday, those roles were reversed. Clase pitched in the eighth. Karinchak came in the ninth. Did give up a run, but still earned his 10th save of the season. And then on Sunday, both of them were unavailable. Brian Shaw got his second save of the season. For the Tigers on Saturday, Gregory Soto got his 8th save. For the Twins on Saturday, Taylor Rogers allowed 2 runs, took his 4th blown save, and his 4th loss of the season. For the Diamondbacks, Joaquin Soria is their closer. He's not great. The team is not great. We know that. On Saturday, he gave up 3 runs, took the loss, and then on Sunday, bounced back, got his 4th save of the season. For the Marlins on Saturday, Yimi Garcia gave up a walk-off 2-run homer to JT Realmuto. And I think we're getting closer to Anthony Bender just getting another shot to be the Marlins closer. So we'll see what happens there. For the Mets on Saturday, Edwin Diaz gave up a walk-off grand slam to Jacob Stallings. And then on Sunday for the Pirates, Richard Rodriguez gave up a 2-run homer to Michael Conforto in the ninth, and he took a loss. Scott, that was a lot of information about a lot of bullpens. Is there anything that you would like to touch on before we talk about some streamers quick?
I would be surprised if Joe Girardi pulled the plug on Suarez after that one blow save, even with Hector Neris getting it done easily on Sunday. It would surprise me if he had an about face that quickly. So I would stick with Suarez.
All right. To stream or not to stream for Monday, Ross Stripling versus the Red Sox, Vladimir Gutierrez versus the Mets, Ryan Yarbrough versus the Orioles, Kyle Muller versus the Padres, Chase DeJong at the Diamondbacks, and Caleb Smith versus the Pirates.
Let's go with Kyle Muller and Ross Stripling.
Yeah, I don't love any of these. Probably Muller. Yarbrough is kind of hit or miss. The Orioles are good against lefties too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Caleb Smith against the Pirates might go okay, but I just don't trust him.
Yeah. I think Muller's the one, and then maybe if you're desperate, Yarbrough or Stripling, but we don't really love those ones. For Tuesday, Tyler Anderson at the Diamondbacks, Dane Dunning at the Tigers, Shane McClanahan versus the Orioles, Mike Minor at the Brewers, Eric Lauer versus the Royals, and Jose Suarez at the A's.
Again, there's only one that I can give a full-throated endorsement of, and that's Shane McClanahan against the Orioles. I don't care how good they are against lefties. He's a special lefty.
All right. No one else.
I don't want to.
Yeah, me neither. Tyler Anderson is like, you know, if you're in a deeper league, you just want to take a shot, I guess. Tyler Anderson at Arizona, but don't love that one either. All right. Well, that was about as much as we could get to in a good amount of time here. So we're going to wrap up. For Scott and Frank, thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
CBS Monday.
NCIS.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.